This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, January 10th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, will present its Masterworks 2 concert Saturday, January 26th at 7:30 p.m. at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. The concert will feature Prokofiev's Symphony No. 5 and Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 1, featuring internationally acclaimed pianist Ching Yun Hu. Tickets available at 443-5600 or waltonartcenter.org.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a court in Washington and Madison counties is using a multidimensional approach to give some offenders a second chance. Jacqueline Froelich reports on the Adult Workforce Division Court. And labs at the University of Arkansas ask volunteers to help them figure out scientific questions about humans and their personalities.
First, during a tour of several sites in central Arkansas yesterday, U.S. Senator Mark Pryor outlined some of his top economic development priorities for the state in 2013. Economic development, job creation, rebuilding roads and bridges, and restoring bipartisanship relationships are his chief concerns, he says. After the November election, Senator Pryor is now the lone Democrat representing Arkansas in Washington.
The history of the Arkansas delegation in Washington has always been to work together. It doesn't matter what the party makeup is or what the personalities are. We have a history of really working together and making Arkansas the top priority. You know, there's 535 members of the House and Senate in Washington, but there's only six of them up there that are looking after Arkansas. Like I said, we've been successful in that, and we want to continue that.
Senator Pryor says the Senate has a strong chance of making a difference in the nation's debt and deficit this year through key pieces of legislation that could set the U.S. up for long-term growth. He says he supports tax reform proposals, wants to modernize the nation's regulatory structure, and says he would like to continue helping the state recruit new industries.
The results of a survey sent to voters in the Bentonville School District last month are in. And district officials will use those results to present a more favorable millage proposal to voters for a high school growth option later this year. District Communications Director Mary Lay says that one thing was clear from all of the surveys returned.
We learned that people that did reply how they felt that they did not want to support expensive athletic fields. Not everyone said that, but I mean, that was a well-stated document over and over again. But we had, as of yesterday, 3,936 cards from voters come back. That's approximately out of 9,100 that were sent out. And 2,334 people said, yes, they would support a second high school, understand the need, but it would have to come in at a lot lower of a cost. And it would have to be more pertinent to academic needs and less to athletic needs.
But scaled back athletic facilities was only one possibility raised by survey respondents.
We also had 682 said that they were interested in more of an alternative school. And sometimes they would also go on to say they wanted more of a vocational technology type program or just a smaller version of a school or maybe ninth grade go to back to junior high. And they had different ideas like that. And then 923 were very adamant that no matter what we asked for, no matter what, they would vote no.
We'll have more about the new millage proposal on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Access to a portion of Fayetteville's Dixon Street will soon be limited at the request of the University of Arkansas. Beginning Monday, Dixon Street west of Harmon Avenue will be limited only to authorized vehicles. That includes emergency vehicles, Razorback transit buses, and others, including drivers with university parking permits for adjacent lots. According to the university, the closure is necessary to ensure pedestrian safety, and the university has grown, it says, so has grown the number of students crossing Dixon Street during the day, mainly at McElroy Avenue. The section of the street will be closed between 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. during the week, but the street will reopen to all traffic when pedestrian traffic is limited, such as weekends and holidays.
Arkansas schools have received a passing grade, though there is still apparent room for improvement. In its latest Quality Counts assessment, Education Week gave Arkansas a grade of 81.7, placing the state fifth behind Maryland, Massachusetts, New York, and Virginia. The grade is a composite of several sub-areas. The state received above-average grades in the areas of standards, assessment, and accountability, transitions and alignment, and the teaching profession. But the state performed on par or slightly below the national average in the areas of school finance and the chance for success. The area where the state scored the lowest was the area of K-12 achievement. The state received a D grade, hampered by a poor score on current achievement levels. In a statement released today, State Education Commissioner Tom Kimbrell says that the report validates the effective policies and reforms in the state's public education system, but that the report confirms that we must expect continued improvement in student achievement and seek innovations to expand learning opportunities.
With taxpayers soon receiving their annual tax statements, officials say there are several things to keep in mind. Mark Stieber, the chief tax officer of Jackson Hewitt Tax Service, advises taxpayers to talk with a tax professional about recent changes.
They'll enjoy a refund about like last year. There are some subtle changes. They probably need to talk with a professional to make sure that they didn't overlook something that they thought was gone. And most importantly, 2013 is going to be much different than 2012. So another good reason to talk to someone. But it is a good year for taxpayers. It's a good thing. We avoided the cliff, and it should be a good refund season for most everybody who filed.
In addition to choosing a tax preparer, Stieber says it's also good to file electronically with the IRS. And he adds, you already know this, that it's better to file as early as possible.
The group that produces the annual Wakarusa Music Festival on Mulberry Mountain has made its second announcement regarding the lineup for this year's festival. Joining the lineup are groups such as Umphrey's McGee, Dispatch, Calexico, and regional favorite, Ben Miller Band. One more lineup announcement is expected to be made 1 week from today.
A new federal study has found that gas drilling is not harming groundwater in the Fayetteville Shale Play. According to Talk Business, the U.S. Geological Survey sampled water from 127 domestic water wells in Van Buren and Faulkner counties and found no indication of contamination linked to hydraulic fracking. Surveyors looked for unusual amounts of methane and chloride concentrations, but the study found there was no statistical difference in groundwater quality between samples from water wells within 2 miles of gas production wells and samples from wells farther than 2 miles from the drilling activity. The report concludes while fewer water quality samples exist prior to the past decade, geochemical data suggest current water quality is derived from naturally occurring processes with no effects, it says, from gas production activities.
According to the National Weather Service in Tulsa, we can expect cloudy skies this evening with a 70% chance of rain. Overnight lows in the mid-40s. Mostly sunny tomorrow with a high near 65 in northwest Arkansas and a high of 69 in the Arkansas River Valley. Increasing clouds tomorrow night with a low of 50 in northwest Arkansas and a 20% chance for showers and a low of 51 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last October, Washington Madison County Drug and Workforce Diversion Court was awarded nearly $1 million in federal grant funding to expand programming as well as to research measurable outcomes. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has been tracking the court's novel approach, which offers intensive career training and placement since it was first implemented more than a year ago. And today, she brings us a status report.
Diversion courts are common in the criminal justice system, designed to divert nonviolent criminal defendants from prison. But the Washington Madison County Adult Drug Workforce Diversion Court provides a much more holistic intervention.
So the whole idea behind drug courts and diversion courts are to address the underlying issues.
Washington County Diversion Court Judge G. Chad Mason has a degree in clinical psychology and has worked in a residential psychiatric facility, so understands, more than most judges perhaps, criminal pathology. He was appointed to his post by Arkansas Governor Mike Beebe to replace drug court Judge Mary Ann Gunn in 2011. Judge Gunn, who televised her drug court, leveraged her local fame into a nationally syndicated reality TV series called Last Shot with Judge Gunn. As a consequence, she's been barred from the state judiciary. When Judge Mason took over, he immediately banned cameras from his courtroom in the historic Washington County Courthouse and expanded his drug court's programming.
This is not rocket science. Anybody on the street would tell you, you know, if asked, what are the things that lead to people's failure in society? And they're going to tell you it's drugs and alcohol. They're going to tell you it's lack of education. They're going to tell you it's lack of employment opportunities. It's lack of housing. It's poor family relationships.
The Washington-Madison County Drug Workforce Diversion Court, as it's now called, captures defendants who've committed nonviolent minor drug theft or fraud offenses before they've entered the court and sentencing gauntlet to provide them a second chance. And it's also available to those on probation and parole. Defendants meet at least once a month with Judge Mason in court, where he listens to their problems, counsels them about options, and if necessary, explains the ropes. Defendants also undergo assessment, treatment, and drug testing at Ozark Recovery Center and AO Day Spring Behavioral Health. Some may need psychiatric treatment or medical treatment at the community health clinic. They also have an option to pursue their GED certification, and Judge Mason provides them lots of vocational opportunities.
You know, we have everyone who comes to this diversion court is assessed for their vocational needs as well, okay? So it doesn't matter how good a job you have or how little of a job you have, you're going to be assessed. And you're still, whether you're a PhD at teaching at the university or you're unemployed living under a bridge, you're going to get your career readiness certificate.
But what sets the Washington County Diversion Court apart from all others is that it's partnered with several local chambers of commerce, businesses, and a major corporation who've agreed to employ defendants.
Tyson Foods is now going to be our first major corporate sponsor. So, you know, we had spent the last 6 months working with Tyson Foods to determine what their needs were and how our work court program, our vocational services program, would benefit them.
In an email response for this report, Tyson spokesperson Gary Michelson declined comment, saying the program will be underway in a few months. The career readiness certificates are provided by the Arkansas Department of Workforce Services, which, along with Judge Mason, teach defendants how to apply for a job, write a resume, what attire to wear, how to communicate with prospective employers. Judge Chad Mason pushed the work component of diversion court after noticing how many defendants languished in the criminal system, some for as many as 6 years, struggling to pay off fines, treatment fees, victim restitution, and court costs, with some even ending up in jail for failure to pay.
And we are motivating employers to hire them because we're doing the drug testing, we're doing the I-9 verification. In other words, their employment status here in the United States, which is a big deal in our community. We're hiring them out and offering them at minimum wage. They have a liaison that they can coordinate with, namely Tracy Risley. If there's a problem with this particular employee, there's no risk to the employer, essentially. They can call back and say, this person didn't show up on time, this person was inappropriate, this person had gotten an argument, and whatever, and it's no harm, no foul. Send them back. I'll take care of them. I'll sanction them and deal with them in my court, and we'll send you another employee.
Judge Mason is high speed, low drag.
That's Washington County Sheriff's Department Deputy Tracy Risley, who spends his days helping diversion court defendants through vocational and educational tracks. He's watched diversion court blossom under Judge Mason's rule.
We're going to give them a chance to right their wrong, prove their worth, and go back into society as a successful individual and not one that has a felony conviction over their head, which is just excess baggage as you go through life, looking for employment, gaining loans, housing, a whole host of things.
He says some defendants with professional careers are able to pay fines and fees out of pocket, but most have to earn it while in diversion court. Those who lag end up working anyway.
If you're not obtaining or working toward obtaining employment, you go to our community service where you'll do 8, 16, 24 hours a week until you gain employment.
And what happens to those who complete diversion court if pre-adjudicated, meaning not convicted? What happens to them?
The judge signs an order to null-process those charges and arrest, and it's as if it never happened at that point.
Deputy Risley says diversion court defendants have worked for car dealerships, marketing and landscape companies, temp agencies, and restaurants, all for minimum wage. Among the 1,435 adult drug court programs nationwide, Washington County's Diversion Court may be the only one like it, said a source at the Justice Policy Center, a nonpartisan research group at the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C. The work of the Washington County Diversion Court was enabled under Arkansas Act 570 of 2011, which allowed for changes in probation, as well as sentencing and parole of convicted criminals, to make room in state prisons for violent offenders. Over the past 12 years, more than 1,600 defendants have participated in Washington County's drug court, with the majority graduating from the program, and more are choosing to participate. Last year, 180 of them, with 66 attaining their career readiness certificates. Again, Diversion Court Judge Chad Mason.
We've employed 27. We've probably employed many more than that on some sort of part-time or limited basis, but those are just some pretty significant numbers of people just in the first 11 months who have gone through this process and are now finding jobs. That's 27 families who now have employment.
Judge Mason says diversion court and partnering agencies work to salvage defendants from reoffending, breaking chronic cycles.
By virtue of having this defendant coordinate with these agencies, we're able to put that person's children, their spouses, into these same services. Because almost all, without exception, of these community agencies, these nonprofit agencies, their mantra, their marching papers are to take in the whole family.
The newly designed diversion court's also saving taxpayer dollars. Since it was launched several years ago, Departments of Community Corrections fee collections increased by 50%, and treatment fee collections increased from 36% to 95%. Judge Mason and his team were lauded by federal and state officials last October and awarded a $975 million three-year federal grant to support chronically underfunded diversion court services, as well as research conducted by UAMS, Department of Family and Preventive Services in Little Rock. Kara Moore, CEO and Executive Director of Ozark Recovery Center in Springdale, authored the grant proposal.
Well, obviously, our goals and what we intend to show are to reduce the costly and harmful impact of trauma and violence and drug use by providing treating the whole person essentially through a holistic system of care. And in doing so, we intend to show that by doing this, the improved long-term recovery outcomes for these participants will be apparent. UAMS will be doing the outcome study of the project. They're going to measure the effectiveness of our program, essentially. They'll follow a defendant through from the first time they enter the program all the way up to 12 months following their intake. And they're going to measure employment and education, family support and family involvement in the person's treatment, days abstinent from alcohol and other drugs, number of arrests and incarcerations, symptoms of psychological distress, housing, and just basic quality of life to see whether or not those things are improving and increasing throughout the length of the project and while they're in the program.
Kara Moore expects research findings to be issued by late 2015 and hopes the program will be replicated nationally. And after 18 months, Judge Chad Mason stepped down from his appointed post in late December, replaced by newly elected 4th Judicial Drug Diversion Court Judge Christy Beaumont. She intends to expand the program with individualized treatment and punitive measures where necessary, she wrote in an email for this report, and she will establish night court to accommodate day shift workers. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Recent attacks in India and Steubenville, Ohio have put rape in the headlines. But how much of what we think we know about rape is riddled with myth and misinformation? I'm Celeste Headley. What we know about rape, who does it and why, who the victims are, and who reports it. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 1 until 3 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
So, Kyle, one of the things that we at KUAF provide to our listeners are PSAs.
Public service announcements.
Right, right.
Yes.
If you have an event or something, you can, email our operations manager, Pete Hartman, and we'll read it on the air.
Dozens of times.
Dozens of times.
Yes.
So in my 2 years or so of reading public service announcements, there have been a number of them that call for participants in studies.
Yes, if you are someone who is at least 21 who drinks so many drinks a day and experiences social anxiety.
Right. Or if you've experienced a traumatic event and you smoke cigarettes.
Right.
Well, so I got curious. I'm like, what is this all about? Why are they conducting these studies?
And what are they
doing
finding
this?
Out? Right.
Right. And what's it for? So I contacted one of the groups at the University of Arkansas that's behind these studies. There are a couple of different labs, but one of them is the Intervention Sciences Laboratory, which is part of the Department of Psychology. And Dr. Matt Feldner is the director. He's also a professor in the psychology department. So he came in and he told me, he started our conversation by telling me what the Intervention Sciences Laboratory does.
What we're really interested at the broadest level is trying to understand post-traumatic stress disorder. Primarily, we also have an interest in panic disorder. And we want to understand it so that we're better able to treat it and prevent it. And we approach it from a number of different angles. And a lot of these different studies have approached it from some of these different angles. One piece I'm really interested in is the types of things that co-occur with PTSD and with panic. So one area is actually the overlap between those two. You often see panic attacks among people with PTSD. I'm also interested in how various health behaviors relate to PTSD. So for instance, problem sleeping.
Could some of those sleep problems maybe be like nightmares?
Absolutely. Nightmares is considered by some to be central to PTSD, and certainly a lot of people suffer from them. And people can develop a fear of actually going to sleep, and so we'll work very hard to avoid going to sleep. And sometimes that avoidance can take the shape of substance use. So really all of these problems are very intertwined in creating a complex problem that we understand to a certain degree, but there's a long way to go.
When we say substance use, are you referring to, prescriptions, things that people have been prescribed by their doctors, or self-medicating through drugs and alcohol?
Yeah, we're more so interested in the latter in my lab. Certainly the prescription drug misuse is an area in need of greater study. And in fact, some of the folks over in the Department of Psychological Science are studying prescription drug misuse. We've focused more on alcohol use, alcohol dependence, alcohol abuse, nicotine also, the role of smoking in coping with the stress that comes along with these sorts of anxiety-related problems, and also kind of trying to understand how withdrawal from these substances can affect the anxiety disorders.
We hear a lot about PTSD now because of veterans coming back from war. But people can have post-traumatic stress syndrome from other experiences in life as well, correct?
That's right. That's a great point. There's been a lot of needed attention devoted to PTSD because of some of these recent military conflicts, and there's great work going on in the VA to understand PTSD and to improve our treatments of it and really to prevent the development of it in the first place. But yes, PTSD can stem from what we would refer to as a traumatic event, which is essentially when someone feels threatened, and then along with that experiences an intense and negative emotion. It might be fear, might be helplessness, something along those lines. So yes, we've been doing a significant chunk of work focused on sexual assault recently. We're interested in kind of the constellation of emotions that come up during an assault, but then also those that tend to sort of haunt people afterwards, and have also been doing some work with veterans as well and some of the National Guard around here.
This not necessarily a silly question, but maybe a silly roundabout way to get to the question. So I've been watching season 2 of Downton Abbey. And that takes place, you know, in the 19-teens. Uh-huh. And there's a character who clearly has PTSD from a World War I experience. And how old is PTSD? I mean, I understand. I mean, like, the actual disorder probably goes back, but when was it first called?
Yeah, that's a great question. It really, the short answer is about 1980. But people started to describe the characteristics of this problem before that, before it technically became a disorder in the diagnostic and statistical manual that psychologists use to diagnose psychopathology. But it's been around, obviously, a lot longer than that.
Earlier, you mentioned, I believe, the VA and maybe your studies and stuff as well, trying to find ways to prevent PTSD. How can you prevent?
Great question. Great question. It's not easy. As I've sort of alluded to, it's a complex constellation of behaviors and problems. And therefore, preventing it is very difficult. There have been a number of different approaches to trying to prevent it, some more successful than others. One thing that is being focused on right now is resilience training and trying to prepare people for the types of experiences they might encounter in combat, for example. And They might focus on preventing the sorts of problems with thinking about the event that can happen to people after a traumatic event. So, for instance, a common one is it was my fault. Maybe the assault was my fault, or losing my friend in combat was my fault. And so preparing people for those kinds of thoughts. But we have a long way to go before we have really very highly effective prevention programs for PTSD, and it's something that I really hope to continue focusing on as I move forward.
So a few minutes ago you mentioned DOD, the Department of Defense. Yeah. Did your center receive a grant?
I've been involved in a couple of DOD-funded projects, that's right. There was one project where we were trying to work with couples where in this particular grant, the male was a veteran or a national member of the National Guard who had PTSD. And what we were trying to do was bring the couple in and treat them as a couple to try to, in addition to treating the PTSD, also try to improve the quality of the marriage. And most recently, the one that we're just currently getting off the ground, I'm also involved in. It's a project where the principal investigator is in Tulsa at the Laureate Institute for Brain Research, where they're doing a lot of really interesting brain research. We are trying to use some really cutting-edge technology to provide people with PTSD, again, veterans or members of the National Guard, in this DOD-funded study, information about activity in their brain, providing them with feedback about amygdala activity, and using that feedback to try to train them to get better at controlling it.
As I mentioned, we read PSAs kind of to help you out to find, or to help the graduate students out to find participants in some of these studies. I'm curious to know if that's successful. Do you get a response from those?
It is successful, yeah, very successful. It's been really helpful as we've progressed. And we tend to get really great response rates from listeners. And interestingly, we use a lot of different recruitment methods, posting flyers, announcements in classes on campus, announcements, radio announcements. We've used some television ads in the past as well. And we find that actually listeners to KUAF are particularly invested in moving the research forward, more so than some of the financial compensation we might offer, which obviously isn't something one can make a career on, but we try to compensate people for their time. But listeners of KUAF come in to help people, and so it's actually been really eye-opening to see that sort of commitment and dedication.
And when you conclude a study, I mean, are there research papers involved when you're finished? I mean,
Yep, there are. We really work hard to disseminate the findings that we have to make sure that we're not just impositioning people to come in for our own curiosity's sake. We disseminate in a number of different ways. We do publish the work out of the laboratory. The graduate students and I and some of our collaborators are very active in that domain. We also present at conferences, a few different conferences that are both national and international in nature. I also will be delivering a lecture on some of this work at an international conference coming up this summer. So we're very active in making sure that others are hearing about this work and ideally replicating the work on their own and extending it, because a lot of what we do, we see as the start to large programs that need to continue to move forward if we're really going to understand and be able to intervene with some of these complicated problems.
All right. Well, if people are interested in what you do at the laboratory, they can find out more at your website.
That's right. They can find out more through the Department of Psychological Science website, through the University of Arkansas, where they'll find a link to both my lab website, which can be found via a Google. It's the Intervention Sciences Laboratory. And on there, there's quite a bit of information about some of the work that we've published, some of our ongoing activities in the external funded domain, and there's also information there about ongoing research studies, and if they're interested in participating in any of those studies, we'd certainly love to have them call the laboratory. The number there is 479-575-5811, and there they can reach one of our research assistants who will determine if any of the studies are, they might be eligible for any one of the ongoing studies.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
I don't think so. I appreciate you having me, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Feldner.
It is Thursday, January 10th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And with us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Martin Brown. She's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Okay, rise from your couch.
Uh-huh.
I know it's January and we want to cave.
Yes.
But rise from your couch and go to the Art Center of the Ozarks tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a fascinating art exhibit, installation, multimedia thing going on there. And there's a reception from 6 to 8.
What is this thing?
The thing is called White River Memoirs.
Mm-hmm.
And a gentleman named Chris Engholm decided he was going to do the history of the White River. And he got in with Alan Lord of the Shiloh Museum, and they made a plan that he was going to do oral histories along the White River.
Oh.
And he thought he would float it because that's what you should do. So he's done like 550 miles of the White River. And along the way, he's met artists and writers and photographers who have spent their life capturing the White River.
So he just pulls over and asks people questions?
And he cheats. He has a follow boat, too.
No.
But
and then,
he's
of course,
been camping and doing the thing on the White River.
And floating the White River now is a little bit more difficult than it was 60 years ago because you got these dams in the way.
But he found great photos and things like that that date back to when people lived on houseboats and fished the White River.
Really?
And they're going to have a boat as part of the exhibition and video as part of the exhibition. And then there will be a book, which was the deal with the Shiloh Museum, like a spiral-bound book of these oral histories he's captured.
And where is this gentleman from?
He is now living in Northwest Arkansas.
Okay.
He was a California.com developer and has done so many things and came here with his wife after they'd been in South America studying the Mayan culture.
Wow.
He's really interesting. And the exhibit will be really interesting. There's also an exhibit of oil paintings by Deirdre West that will be up in the other Art Center of the Ozarks Gallery. And they'll be up through January 25th. But if you want to go to the reception, there will be many interesting people there. He has photos by Don House as part of the exhibit, photos by other people from downstate who shot closer to the turn of the 20th century. Really interesting.
Yeah,
6 to 8 o'clock tonight.
Grew up a stone's throw from the White River.
I know.
Yeah.
And, of course, Catch Me If You Can continues tonight at the Walton Arts Center. 7 o'clock tonight, 8 o'clock tomorrow night, 2 and 8 on Saturday, and 2 and 7:30 on Sunday.
Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, this is Robert Ginsberg, your host for the Saturday edition of Shades of Jazz, every Saturday from 10 p.m. till 1 a.m. This week on the show, we'll hear music from the great drummer Tony Williams and singer Jackie Ryan. We'll also hear from tenor saxophonist Ike Quebec, pianist Chick Corea, and much, much more. That's the Saturday edition of Shades of Jazz at 10 p.m.
Is Ozarks at Large. A reminder about an event at the Fayetteville Public Library Sunday afternoon. The library, AETN, and KUAF are sponsoring another in the series of documentary films and discussions in the ongoing Community Cinema Series. Sunday afternoon at 2, the film Soul Food Junkies will be screened at the library. Through interviews with cooks, historians, doctors, scholars, family, and friends, filmmaker Byron Hurt explores the origins of and traditions surrounding soul food, as well as the positive and negative consequences of its relationship to African Americans. Afterward, a public discussion about the film will be moderated by KUAF's Molly Ron. The screening is free and it's open to the public.
Monday at the Clinton Presidential Center in Little Rock, Legos for Children and Adults. The Clinton Center welcomes brick artist Nathan Sawaya. Not sure of the pronunciation,
I think that's it, but yeah.
Sawaya, with photographer Dean West. In Pieces partners 7 large scale, highly stylized photographic images with uniquely constructed 3-dimensional Lego brick sculptures. This collection draws the viewer into the tableau while literally surrounding them with the physicality of the art. The Monday night event in Little Rock is free, but reservations are recommended.
From Legos to Monopoly, one of the eight current Monopoly tokens will be retired. You know what I'm talking about, the top hat, the iron.
Right, the dog, the Scotty dog.
The Scotty dog, wheelbarrow. One of those eight will be voted off on a Facebook page and replaced with a more modern figure like a robot, guitar, or helicopter. Now, this morning on our Ozarks at Large Facebook page, I asked if there were an Ozarks version of the game. And keeping in mind, there have been many different versions of Monopoly.
Right. We mentioned earlier there's a Hogopoly also.
Right, University of Arkansas. There's a SpongeBob SquarePants version. There is a Lord of the Rings version.
I bet there's a Star Wars one.
I'm sure there is. But if there was an Ozarks-centric version of Monopoly, what could be the tokens for that edition? I suggested on the Facebook page a small replica of Thorncrown Chapel.
Okay.
Others in just the past few hours have suggested Old Main, a canoe, a Razorback. More than one person said a figure of Sam Walton. And you can see all the other suggestions right now at our Facebook page.
Or make your own suggestions.
Please do.
Yeah.
Come on, let's play Monopoly. Cash fun and rinsey property. You'll visit in my neighborhood. I'll land on chance and hope it's good. We'll roll the die and let our worries fly away. Let's play.
It is Thursday, January 10th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Jody Beznoska, who is Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center. Welcome back.
Thank you. 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa. You left the country in, what, 2012?
I know.
And came back and it was...
And I came back and it was a whole new year. What happened? <Yeah.
laughs> You also came back and Catch Me If You Can.
Yes.
Got on stage.
Yeah, we flew in at about the same time. Ha! Sorry.
Really?
I've been wanting to make that stupid airline joke all morning. Sorry.
Well, now you have.
Now I have. Thank you. My day is complete. I can go home now. No. Catch Me If You Can opened Tuesday. And so we've had two performances. We have one tonight at 7 p.m. And then we have a show tomorrow and two on Saturday and just one on Sunday.
Oh.
Normally
just the matinee?
Just the matinee. Normally we would have two shows on Sunday, but for this run we only have the matinee performance on Sunday. And all things being, I have heard from everybody that the show is a lot of fun. I'm hearing a lot of comments on Facebook and Twitter that people are surprised at how much they enjoyed it. Because it's not a familiar Broadway show. It could be a familiar title if you've seen the movie. But a lot of people going, how in the world would they make that into a Broadway musical? Well, apparently it's fun.
It did win a Tony on Broadway for Best Actor.
It was at least nominated for
It was nominated for several and Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy.
And it's definitely a song and dance musical. Big dance numbers, bright colors. A lot of the – you'll recognize some of the color palettes and some of the look and feel if you know the movie. Feels very similar to that. And apparently it's just a lot of fun. It's about 2 hours long, maybe a little bit longer with intermission. And we're hearing about a lot of people having good date nights and, you know, kind of beating the gray weather with this really fun song and dance. So I hope lots of people will come out and see it over the weekend. We have a lot of shows left and we have tickets for all of those shows.
Okay.
So if you are feeling blue post-holidays, this might be a good way to pep it up a little bit. And then January is a lighter month for us at Walton Arts Center, which is unusual, but nice, I think, because we have a lot of planning to do for next year during that time. But so after Catch Me If You Can ends on the 13th, our next show will be on the 19th, and that will be The Velveteen Rabbit. And this will be a production produced by a dance company. So it's not a play per se. It's going to have movement and dance. And I just learned yesterday actually that the new school in Fayetteville will have a whole bunch of kids who will be participating as part of that show, which I think is really neat. And then the dance company ODC will also be doing another show that evening on the 19th, this time in Star Theater. They will be doing a small dance show in that little intimate space, and they'll take us through how a dance gets choreographed. You know, we might see a little bit of rehearsal, but then we'll also see a full piece. But this will be smaller stuff.
And that's open to the public?
Yes, yeah. You buy a ticket for it just like you would for anything else.
And for adults as opposed to the one that they do earlier in the day.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I suppose if you have kids and they're interested in dance, they would enjoy this. But it's, you know, it's more of a more of a dance show than a kids production. So that one is, I believe that's 8 o'clock in Star Theater. This is on the 19th. That's Saturday. And then the following Saturday, Sona will have their
Masterworks 2.
Masterworks 2 concert. So, gosh, it feels like they just did their Christmas concert.
They did.
Yeah. They did. But they're back for their third show of the year. They're having a great year, and I'm sure it's going to be wonderful. It's really been fun to watch the progression of Sona and how their shows just keep getting better and better.
This is still just the second full season.
Yeah, which is which is remarkable, mm-hmm. really, when you consider that they took a few years off and basically reconstituted themselves. So pretty excited for Sona's show. And then it's February. February picks up. There's lots going on in February. But I did want to talk a little bit about Memphis, which is the Broadway show coming after Catch Me If You Can. This one is also a Tony winner. Mm-hmm. Forget the year. Could be 2009, 2010, I'm not sure. It's an all-original musical. It's set in Memphis, and it's the story of a white DJ who falls in love with black music and how he tries to share that music with the world and the people he meets along the way. And, of course, he meets a singer and he falls in love, and it's just wonderful. It's a really beautiful, compelling story that makes you smile. It touches you. It's emotional, and it's set in Memphis. And I have talked to a lot of my friends who have seen it, who have connections to Memphis, who have traveled there, and they say it feels very nostalgic, very true to that city.
If you ever get back to Memphis, go to the Rock and Soul Museum, which tells the story of how rock and roll and Memphis and white singers and black singers and black musicians and white musicians and DJs all got together and created Stax and Sun Records and things like that. And if you go to the Rock and Soul Museum and then go to Memphis, you'll have a real good feel for
it. Yeah.
So this is like 1950s?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And it surprised me when I first saw it. I had no idea that I would care, really, honestly, because I'm not from the South and I have been to Memphis once in my life. And so, but it really got me. It was a great show.
But, the music that came out of Memphis from the early 50s through the early 70s, I mean, you didn't have to be from the South. It was all over the place.
It was everywhere. Yeah. And so that runs from that starts on the 5th of February. That's a week-long show. We have 8 performances of it.
Six nights, yep.
8. Yeah,
and 6 days, 8 shows.
Correct, yeah. So get your tickets for that. It's going to be, I think that will be one of our sleepers for the year. That will be one where people go, oh my gosh, I cannot believe how good that was.
Any other surprises coming up? Because we had the Mary Chapin Carpenter and Sean Colvin that sort of dropped on us. Anything?
Not that I know of right now. Okay. I mean, it's other than that, very soon, I can't believe it's January already. I mean, within the next 4 to 6 weeks, we'll start to talk about next year.
Next
publicly?
Year.
Yeah,
you're talking about it behind closed
doors
right now.
Yeah, of course we're doing that. But but definitely it'll be time to start teasing some of the fun shows that are coming next year and getting ready to launch our subscription season. And, of course, we're going to, soon we'll be talking about Artisphere and The Art of Wine and War Horse and all those great shows coming up in the spring. Theater Squared will be having their third show soon. So take a breath for a couple of days, but it's about to get really busy.
And one other note, Cedar Lake Ballet.
Yes.
They've canceled their tour.
That's correct.
That was a 10 by 10.
Yeah, that was on January 25th,
right.
I think.
Just so you know.
Absolutely. So if you have tickets for that, I know we have been trying to call and email everybody who has tickets for that, but if you haven't heard from us and you're hearing me, give the box office a call and they'll take care of you. They'll either give you money back or give you a credit or put you into another show. So.
And for those that have programs, because it's in the programs, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, so just take a sharp.
So, get out the big black marker and go across that one off. Yep.
Thanks, Jody.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jody. Jody Besmoska is Vice President for Communications at the Walton Arts Center.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, it's another name brand interview you won't want to miss. It was R.J. Mischow and his good friend from Minnesota, Jeremy Johnson. I've played all the songs of previous shows, but this is the first time I've put the interview together. That's Friday night at 9 o'clock, the Generic Blues Show on KUAF. We'll see you then.
Monday afternoon, Christine and I were fortunate enough to have, well, actually by the time the day was over, several musicians in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Adams Collins, who has a new CD that's being released tonight called Coffee Pot came in with his bandmates.
Yes, they did. And they played a couple of songs. One of them was titled Myrna's Magic Wind Tunnel.
Myrna's Magic Wind Tunnel. Right. It's kind of a tongue twister. And we're going to hear that performance in a moment. You should also know that Adams Collins was on vibes. Garrett Jones was on bass. Drew Packard, guitar. Johnny Arredondo, drums. Nathan McLeod, for this performance, was on the clarinet. The CD release party is tonight at Scarpino's.
Right.
As you mentioned, the title of the song?
Myrna's Magic Wind Tunnel.
So here is the explanation of the song and the performance from inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
It was kind of a curious way to write. When I was in graduate school, my girlfriend at the time, her name was Mariah. Her nickname was Myrna.
I wanted to ask where Myrna came from. Yeah. Who Myrna was.
Right. And she was in Fayetteville and I was in Boulder. And she called me one night when I was practicing, and I was really pulling my hair out and stressed out and stuff. And she's like, hey, why don't you just write me some music, you know? And I was like, oh, all right, this sounds different than trying to do whatever I was doing at the time. And she's like, write me a song about a wind tunnel. And so I was like, oh, all right. And I got off the phone with her and sat down at the piano for a few minutes and just kind of, like, worked out a few things and then turned on a recorder and pretty much played the song as it still stands. You know, I went back and listened to it and, you know, made some tweaks to kind of like polish up some of the melody and a few of the form issues. But I really like the song because it's one of those songs, as I was mentioning before, that I think is suited to what the vibraphone does well. And it has this kind of like ethereal, mystical quality, you know, and to try and conceptualize a magic wind tunnel, you know, while I was playing it, I think it all the elements were there for it to come across, and it's really fun to play. I love the harmony, I'm excited about this song a lot.
Thank you.
Adams Collins and his band were in the Furman Garner Performance Studio Monday. Adam on vibes, Garrett Jones bass, Johnny Arredondo on drums, Drew Packer guitar. Nathan McLeod was heard on the clarinet.
Adam's new CD, Coffee Pot, is officially released at a show tonight at Scarpino's on West Avenue in downtown Fayetteville. You will also be able to find the CD at iTunes, cdbaby.com, and amazon.com. Tomorrow on Ozarks, more music recorded inside Furman Garner. RJ Michaud recently played for Paul Kelso and KUAF's Generic Blues Show. The full performance can be heard tomorrow night at 9 on KUAF. Tomorrow on our show, we'll have a small preview.
Let's see. Tomorrow on the show, also Antoinette will be with me.
She will.
But you and I back together for the first time in several Sundays on Weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9.
Yes. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Short, Oklahoma.
Where? Short, Oklahoma?
Directly north of Roland.
Oh, okay.
So, Sequoia County?
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And it's going to be 60s today, near 70 tomorrow, and then possibly some sleet 24 hours after
Sunday
that.
Sunday or Monday, yeah.
Winter in the Ozarks. You got to love it. All right. Thanks, Christina, so much.
Thank you.
And like I said, Antoinette will be with me tomorrow, you and I, Sunday morning at 9 on Weekend Ozarks at Large.